From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live.
The choice is between normal,
Natalie Cheel,
or crazy.
Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Okay. It's Wednesday, March the 29th, 2023, and we are still on air. Yes, we are. Natalie Cheel and I will be beaming out our messages of love, hope, peace, destruction, death, and pessimism, all mixed in together in a big cake, a big TNT cake. And the icing on that cake, and even the candles and maybe a few cherries, will be none other than Dee Dee Denslow, who's going to be joining us very shortly to talk about some shenanigans that are going on in the UK. So, yeah, it's another day. We are live here at the moment. Just hello to everybody in the live chat. Just an early shout out to Holly. She's asking about the security levels in Northern Ireland. I'll be talking about that with Darren in the second hour. So stay tuned for that one, Holly. That will be touched upon. And also to Mazzy, she says good morning Rick and Natalie. Good morning to you also, Mazzy, and everybody else that's listening to the show out there. We have a lot to get through today, so just to kick us off, just very very briefly before we move to the housekeeping, the Red Arrows, the legendary British flying unit that is very good at appearing at air shows and one thing and another, and doing stunts and whatnot, they have been removed from Scampton. So we've been talking this week about people being bussed into Scampton. 1,500 men are due to go in there, into Scampton, if the public don't take drastic action, writes Active Patriot on Twitter. So he's just highlighting the fact that the Red Arrows are actually being moved out of that RAF base as we speak. So that is not a good sign. And yes, they're telling, he's encouraging people to stop that by blocking them going in like the Irish did. Yep, the Irish have been very active on the ground over the last few months when it comes to demonstrations and protesting against people being bussed into their areas, usually under cover of night. We don't know who they are. We don't know what they're going to do. Just simply asking questions that aren't getting answered. So they blocked an army barracks over the weekend in Mullingar, and the men were relocated elsewhere. Where exactly? We don't know yet, but they didn't end up in that army barracks in that one particular area. So that's just an update on the story on Scampton. I was covering it yesterday with Roger Tattersall, and there's a rather sad picture of a long flatbed truck with an RAF jet on it driving out of Scampton. I can only imagine to make room for people to be inserted in there. That's all I'm going to say, but I'm sure the story will continue to develop. So this is TNT Radio, and we are live this morning at about 11:15. We'll be opening up the lines if you feel like calling in and talking to Natalie or I, or both of us at the same time, hopefully, if one of us doesn't get disconnected. You're free to do that, and you can discuss whatever the heck you like, anything that's on your mind, anything you want to discuss. The lines are open, and we are open also to whatever it is that you have to say. So download our app on the App Store or the Google Play Store, and stay connected with us perpetually here, please, on TNT Radio.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, we're going to kick it off with Darren and renting. The number of UK homes available for rent allegedly is down by a third. This is a painful topic for you, Darren, I know, with your landlord having clobbered you over the head for a 25% rent increase recently. What's the word on the street with this one?
Yeah, I was actually on air at the time, and I was getting phone calls, and I was like, don't phone me, whoever it is, don't phone me, I'm on air. And it was my landlord putting my rent up by 25%. It's been long down the line. I've been waiting for it. I actually put a tweet out asking the general public, or the Twitter sphere, on what they felt about, or what was happening with them in their renting situation, whether they were a tenant or a landlord. And a lot of the feedback that I got back was that their rents had going up. And here we seem to have some confirmation that this is impacting on the ability of people to even rent in the first place. The number of homes available to rent in the UK has fallen by a third over the past 18 months. The sharp drop in the number of listings has helped drive up rents for new tenants by, on average, 11%. So it's a big, on average, rent increase. Letting agencies typically have 10 rentals compared to over 16 before September 2021. Figures are shared with the BBC by property website Zoopla. The number of rental properties in the UK has actually fallen. In fact, it's barely moved since 2016. But it's just the number of people that have come into the market looking to rent because they can now no longer afford to buy. Massive mortgage rates increases because of the interest rates and the inflation that we're experiencing in this economic crisis means that there's greater demand than there is supply. People who want to move but can't find anywhere new are having to stay put. That means their old place doesn't become available for someone else to move into. And with people unable to move, fewer properties become vacant and appear in the estate agent's windows. We've seen a big increase in demand by renting housing from record high immigration. So that's obviously going to have an impact on it. The economy reopening after the plandemic. But at the same time, we just haven't seen much new investment by landlords in rented housing. And that's creating a real crunch in availability. So people can't afford to rent. There isn't the availability of rental properties. There's too much demand and people can't afford to buy. So where are people going to live, Rick? Natalie,
what do you reckon about this one?
Well, I don't think it's a great surprise this has happened. We were kind of predicting this over the last couple of years with the financial collapse and the mortgage rates going up, which of course then means the buy-to-let rates go up, which affect all those landlords. It's no surprise that they are having to put up the rent. I think overall, it's just going to keep getting worse as we think about what they've said about Agenda 30. We know the banks have now changed the law through Parliament to become landlords themselves. And it seems to me that if over time that not many people can rent or buy, it's easier to push that UBI and digital ID. And I think that's the kind of end game plan in the end. But it's hard enough to get a rental anyway. You need a guarantor. Most of them won't even take benefits. I can only see this problem getting worse. What do you think, Rick?
Yeah, the whole supply and demand thing as well, as you've pointed out, there's a lot of banks are buying up houses now. A lot of private investment firms are buying up big blocks of houses. And just simply the availability's not there. There was another case in Ireland there recently where there was a block of houses in a new development. There were seven houses within it, were all sale agreed with the purchasers. But then they were told the sale's not going ahead because someone else's came in and bought them at a higher price. So I think they call that gazumping or whatever the term is when it comes to buying houses. So they were told no. So one person came in and bought all seven houses, thus keeping seven families out of seven new builds. So what do they do now? They have to then go looking for either another property or they have to look for a rental property, and they're all flooding into the market at the same time. And the people that are in rental properties, even if they need to move somewhere or they want to move somewhere else, they're staying put because it's Russian roulette. If they move from a guaranteed rental to try and find another house elsewhere, there's no guarantee that they're going to get somewhere in the place that they want to go. So it's a real squeeze out there in the rental market. And as Darren rightly knows, the prices aren't going down anytime soon. They're going up, up, up. Whether or not rates or council taxes included in your rental or bills, as in Darren's case, which he's told us before, this is not private information that I'm sharing. He's been very open about his current setup. He can negotiate maybe a 6-month payment deal, or he'll pay 6 months up front, so he has some certainty. But there's nothing to stop your landlord, Darren, coming back in another 6 months and saying, listen, mate, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to put it up another 25%. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, his mortgage for this property alone has gone up £500 a month. He has multiple properties. He's tried to sell some of them, not the one I'm in. He can't because prices are coming down. And so, you know, what can he do? He's been having to put up with this, eating through his own finances for months and months and months as these interest rates going up. And eventually he's having to pass the cost on to me. And I put my hands up to him and say, fair enough, What can I do? I'm still not going to get a better deal anywhere else. So I'm grateful to my landlord for absorbing those costs for so long. But other people, the comments I got back on my Twitter was that in general, lots of people are like, my landlord's just whacked my rent up £200 a month. £300 a month. Landlords are going, I've had to increase my rent 100% because I'm being absolutely brutalized with my mortgage that I've done as a, I've procured or got hold of as a buy to let. And so those buy to let mortgages, they're not happening now. That means there's less rental properties in the market. That means there's less places for people to live. And as Natalie said, last thing Natalie is, it all feeds into the agenda, doesn't it? You'll own nothing. You'll be happy. Here's your UBI. Here's your rent. Yeah, that's what's coming.
I think it also depends on whether your landlord is paying the mortgage or not. My rent's been the same for 5 years, and I'm pretty sure they're an elderly couple that own this property, so they're not paying a mortgage. So it really does depend. If you've got a landlord that owns another 10 properties in the area, chances are your rent's going to go up. There was another article today in the Telegraph that landlords now have got 5 years to hit their net zero targets, so they'll be blocked from letting properties unless they upgrade them to meet net zero energy efficiency targets within 5 years, and they're going to be needing to spend more money, spend thousands of pounds increasing it to the energy performance, or face a fine of £30,000. So that's not going to help these rent prices either, is it? More money needing to be spent. It's not going to encourage them to go into the property market, which is already struggling. So I think, you know, it's not looking good whether you're renting or buying at the moment, is it?
No, that's an interesting one too. You said about the net zero, because they are going to impose, certain levels. I can remember years and years ago, they first introduced the EPC, the Energy Performance Certificate. So if you were buying a house, or if you were buying my house from me, I would have had to pay someone to come out and rate my property A, B, C, D, E, F, G, depending on its energy efficiency. Complete scam. You had to pay like 250 odd quid to someone to produce a certificate with a little green bar on it that I would hand to you, and you would look at it and say, well, I don't really give a damn about that. I like the house and want to buy it. But this is going to be another level to this. And of course, those costs to the landlord or the owner are going to be passed on to the next buyer or the tenant. So it's not looking good out there if you want to either A, rent the place, or B, afford to rent the place. And Darren, there was a rent calculator you were highlighting as well on the website to say the average person allegedly is paying roughly a third of their monthly income in rent. I would say it's not too far off them. Yeah, I would say it's at least a quarter. Based on anywhere in Belfast at the minute, even to rent a flat, you're talking about 1,200 quid a month, which may not be much in relation to London, etc. But our wages are so much lower over here. I don't. What's it like in Reading, Natalie?
Reading has gone absolutely crazy because I live in a small flat. My children are getting older. I was like, I might look at like trying to get something a bit bigger with a garden, and I looked at the prices and I went, no, I will not be. You're looking at a small, tiny house with the tiniest garden for £1,500 a month. I mean, I know we're close to London, but then put your bills on that as well. How much have you got to be earning?
It's mental. Do you know what you should do? Here's my tip for anyone. My tip for anybody out there that doesn't have a garden, that lives in a flat, go to your local park or your local forest and just pretend it's yours, right? Pretend you own it and walk around and say, look at my beautiful garden. I sometimes used to do that years ago when I walked to Tullymore Forest Park. I was like, driving in through those gates going, hey, I'm home again. Walking around the Shimna River going, wow, look at my beautiful river. Just having a laugh into myself thinking, it might as well be mine. If you pretend it's yours, damn it, it's yours. So don't fret too much about the lack of a garden. Or you can always get one of those little window boxes and grow parsley in it and put your face really close to it so it looks like you're in a jungle. You can do all sorts of things to get around that. But it's all good. Darren, thank you very much, my friend.
Unless
you're renting, of course, yeah. Unless you're renting, and maybe your landlord won't allow you to grow parsley in the window. I don't know.
No.
But you'll be back in an hour, and we'll be talking about the ongoing increase in security levels in Northern Ireland allegedly were primed and ready for an imminent terrorist attack. Nothing new if you've been growing up here all your life like I have, but something to bear in mind. So Darren, big salute and a big thank you to that. Listeners, we will be back in 2 minutes' time. The lines will be open and you can talk to either Natalie and I here on Open Line on TNT Radio. Don't go away.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
So Houston, the government stepped in because failing grades. And they were also, the government, not happy with all of the programs for disabled kids. They were not up to par. Now, it's fair to say, pre-pandemic, pandemic, now, education system lacking behind. Easily, kids are at least a year behind. Now, here's the problem. This is mostly the majority house is Republican. So the Democrats are fighting, again, that weaponization, which does not belong in the school classrooms and all that. But what do you do when it's a failing school system? And of course, the ACLU, they stepped in and they're fighting because they want everybody to have freedom. The problem with Houston is, and this is what we really have to look at, and people are afraid to really go near this point, but I'm going to mention it. The public school system in Houston is 90% made up of children of color, Black, Hispanic. And why not be able, in my warrior's dream world, can you imagine school choice for these kids? Who could really, you know, flower in this environment?
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Our lines are now open. Call Natalie Cheel and Rick Munn now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yes, indeed it is. That was quite an interesting opener there with Darren. I think Holly or Miles was saying it sounds like he has Dick Turpin for a landlord. They can't put the rental prices up by 25%. It's legit, believe me. I've seen the documentation. I think one of the things with Darren is, and again, he'll tell you this owner himself, but I think his utilities are his electric or his gas is included in that, or his council tax. I'm not sure, but that's maybe why they're factoring in increases in that as well. So yeah, it's legit. And he can tell you more about that maybe if he comes back on again. Natalie, we have a lot to get through here today. There's so much going on at the minute. Do you want to kick us off here? What are we going to kick off with?
Well, carrying on from where you were talking about the migrant story before, there's a story in the Daily Mail today that ministers pledged to house asylum seekers on barges moored off the British coast in a bid to slash taxpayers' £3.5 billion bill for hotels. And that obviously includes what you said about RAF Scampton as well. I mean, we have seen so many stories, haven't we, this week coming through all about immigration. This is being pushed massively in the mainstream media. I mean, we had protests and demonstrations at a hotel outside Newquay. We have the New Forest District Council signing a $1.87 million deal to house Ukrainian and Afghan families. And then there was also RAF Wethersfield as well to house asylum seekers and forcing military families out. You've now mentioned Scampton. This is all in the last couple of days. You know, to me, they're really wanting the public divided on this issue.
Well, here's the thing. This business about the barges, okay, they're highlighting the fact that at the minute the taxpayers funding a £3.5 billion bill for hotels at the moment. And this is right across the UK. This is also starting to happen more and more in Northern Ireland. So barges similar to those used by construction crews could house migrants. The government is also set to put asylum seekers in large-scale camps. Now, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen any camps being constructed. Maybe what they mean is they're going to put them into, there was a case yesterday, I was talking to Rog Tattersall about last year, there was a place in up in the north called Linton-on-Ouse. There was a disused RAF base there. They were going to put 1,200 men in there, but the population of the village, Natalie, was only 700 old people, and there's no amenities. There was only the village post office. So you're going to have their population literally going up by 200% overnight. That was blocked. I don't know where the men ended up, but there's only so many hotel rooms Serco can buy up at the end of the day. There's only so much money they can spend on this, so they're having to look at barges now.
Well, I think this is the reason that these stories are being pushed. I don't think there's any answer or solution. It's that they're saying it's £150 a night they're having to pay for each immigrant, which is not sustainable in any way at all. And there's this, you know, on both sides of the coin, you've got this happy-go-lucky, sugar-coated ideology that everyone should be treated the same and that everyone should be housed. But on the other hand, how can you economically afford to pay for those? And how can any government do so? And that actually isn't ever being answered. And they're pushing these stories out almost to have that polarization of views. If you don't house them, you're a racist. And if anyone that is on the other side, they haven't got a clue and they're airy-fairy. It seems that actual possible solutions are not actually being discussed here, because it's not sustainable in any way at all.
Here's the thing too, try and put yourself, or I'll try and put myself into the position of the men that are being sent to the camps or the RAF bases or the barges. Now, I know they've come here, many of them illegally, and I know they could have stayed where they are, but let's say they've come anyway and they've landed, okay? So you, me, pretend you're a wee man, or I'll pretend I'm a wee woman, and there's another 60 to 100 of us. We're being moved into an area, and they say, okay, guys, you're going onto a barge, okay? You're not going to have your own room. You're going to be sharing a bathroom. You've got nothing to do. You don't really have a lot of space there. You'll be in dormitory-style accommodation. You know, you've got the culture shock of coming here anyway, and it is a culture shock if you've never been to the UK before to be dropped in the middle of all this. So what will that do? People will start to go a little bit stir crazy. They'll start to look for ways to blow off steam. They could already be unhinged. I mean, like, if you're a normal, sane person, and if the TNT staff were all locked up in the studio together, I would say after a month we'd probably be killing each other, and we all sort of get along and we're not nuts. So how much more so a group of unknown men from different ethnicities, put them all together, it could be another recipe for unrest. And that's part of the plan.
Exactly that. I wasn't going to say it's part of the plan. I saw that you sent me an article about Canada's immigration going up there, actually promoting it there. We're in Ireland, they were saying the kind of security numbers have gone massively up through immigration. And earlier in the week, Darren was saying how much France's immigration going up. This isn't just a British problem. The immigration levels everywhere are being pushed. And I just wonder, is this part of a plan? Like you said, it's causing kind of rifts. It's causing tensions. Is this part of a plan, if it gets out of control, for our safety, everyone will need a digital ID to be monitored? Do you see where I'm coming from? Like,
it's got to be leading that way.
Pushing that way to me. Is that, are they deliberately making this immigration a problem to do so? That's what I'm wondering.
I've seen pictures. There was a community center in Ireland, like a public sports, you know, a sports hall that was used by, you know, the community for badminton and five-a-side, and the local scout troop or whatever would use it. It was taken over to provide emergency accommodation for people coming in. And I showed you a photograph inside, and there must have been 100 fold-up beds in there, you know, clean sheets, pillows, towels, etc., a little locker at the bottom to put your stuff. But if you've ever seen any documentaries on prisons in America, when they have an overcrowding problem, they don't have enough cells, they'll put the men into dormitories, or they'll convert a sports hall into overflow accommodation. And that is the most volatile place in the prison, period, because they're all in there literally shoulder to shoulder. They're getting angry, tense. You know what it's like. I don't know about you, but I like my personal space. When someone starts invading my personal space, I get a little bit angsty. Now imagine that multiplied by 24 hours a day, and it's a group of unknown men that you don't know, and they're maybe thinking exactly the same thing about you. To me, it's just to ratchet up the tension. So when you let a group of men like that out, maybe they want to blow off steam. They're going to get drunk. They're in a foreign land. They think everybody hates them. Yep. They're going to start getting violent. It's all part of the plan.
Yep. The plan is to increase tensions between the immigrants, between segregation, between the immigrants and the citizens. And then it's a recipe for disaster. So what's going to be their answer to solve this and for everybody's safety? The same answer, it seems, for climate change, the same answer for COVID. The same answers, always the same thing, Rick. It's always digital ID, digital app.
They absolutely will come and save the planet. And here's the thing too, yeah. It's the government. We have to keep the focus on the government because, the government says they're bringing people in because they want to give them a new life. They want to support them. They want to give them a future. They don't want to keep refugees out. The government don't give a damn about refugees any more than they give a damn about you or me. The government's only interested in the government and keeping the government right and control over everybody and using whatever means they can to implement said control. And if that involves creating such a degree of tension leading to civil unrest that they absolutely have to clamp down, and the only way that they can do it is to provide you with that digital ID that you may not be able to rent the house without. By the way, they're talking about your need a guarantor, we need to make sure you're legit, we need this, we need that. There's your digital ID, Mr. Landlord, let me in.
And again, we've seen the protests appear in different countries around the world. This, to me, is going to be a big issue, the immigration, and probably a reason for further protests. And we keep hearing build back better. You can't build back better unless you collapse it first. And it seems to me, again, this is being pushed to make it a huge problem, to increase tensions, It seems to be getting worse. There seems to be more stories every day. And as we know in the newspapers, they can hide a story if they want. If they didn't want the public to know about the immigration problems, they don't need to put these stories in the paper. But they're pushing them every day, more and more.
They want you to know. And we're helping them. We're helping spread the word. But it is in the news, and it is relevant to all
of
us.
In an objective way, though.
In an objective way. And it is something. It's going to affect us all, Natalie, whether we like it or not. Yeah. And irrespective of where we live, it's coming to a town or a village near you. We've got to take a little break for news. When we come back, if you're listening in, if you're being wrecked by your rent, if you're being jacked up your rent prices, if you're trying to rent, you can't find a place, or you're in an area where you're concerned about an influx of people from wherever it happens to be that's causing a little bit of societal unrest, let us know. You can give us a call or leave us a message in the live chat. But we'll be right back after this short break here on TNT Radio.
What's making news? TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylant here with your TNT headlines. It's been revealed the transgender man who went on a shooting rampage at an elementary school in Tennessee, killing 6 people, including 3 children, had amassed a secret cache of weapons at his home, despite being diagnosed with a mental illness. Ukraine is struggling with internet connection issues after many of Elon Musk's Starlink terminals suddenly stopped working. And Russia's blasted Washington for its hypocrisy after the US State Department condemned Moscow's move to deploy nuclear weapons to Belarus.
TNT Radio wants to hear from you. Call Rick Munn and Natalie Cheel now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, Natalie, you referenced something that I had sent you, but we never actually got to talk about it due to other things jumping the queue, as it were. But just to touch on it really briefly to give people some idea of figures, Ireland's population is currently around about 5 million. Last year, 57,000 PPS numbers were issued to Irish people, whereas 250,000 were issued to foreigners. How can anyone say the Irish are not being replaced? This is not racism, it's simply mathematics. And to give you an idea, just a flavour of the breakdown, the state issued almost 306,000 personal public service numbers last year, the PPS numbers, which is a significant increase on previous years. A total of 68,000 were issued to Ukrainians, 21,000 were issued to Indians, 15,500 to Romanians, 9,500 to Spanish, 1,500 Algerians, 47,000 French people, and 16,000 Brazilians. What the hell are the French and the Brazilians coming here for?
Well, are they French and Brazilian? Have they even done the checks and the monitoring correct? I have no idea. It's just, again, it's not sustainable. In an ideal world, everyone should have this the same opportunity. You know, there should be no race or you know, countries, and we should be able to move around. But unfortunately, the world does have economic, like, we're all sanctioned to that, aren't we? We don't have all the money in the world. The world doesn't exist in this perfect ideology. Therefore, it's just not going to be able to be carrying on. We can't. Every country just can't not have limitless immigration and then think that there's going to be no problems in the long term or future with it.
Do you know what we'll do here, right? As a contrast, we'll go from one extreme to the other. We'll go from a country like Ireland that doesn't seem to give a damn about its borders, or the UK doesn't give a damn. Yeah. Let's go to Australia, okay? And let's go specifically to Western Australia. One guy on the planet certainly loves to police the borders is R. Mark McGowan, the so-called Premier of Western Australia. Now, during the COVID years, the Western Australians had a right old time of it. They couldn't enter or leave the state. It was Western Australia's tucked away off, of course, in the west. There's this massive desert, Mad Max style desert wasteland that seems to separate it from the west of Australia, acts as almost like a natural barrier for movement, and McGowan policed it hard. Now, allegedly, what he's doing is he has signaled the return to tough border laws used during the pandemic. The Western Australian Premier is now allowing police to stop and search anyone entering the state, justification being, well, when we did that during COVID, we actually cracked down on the drug problem that we have here. So hell's bells, why not just roll it out again? Let's police ourselves even harder. It looks like McGowan is the opposite to Rishi Sunak and the opposite to Leo Varadkar. McGowan likes his borders tight.
I was reading this story this morning and thought it's a strange one, because how are people not complaining about people's human rights on this one, yet in this country it's the other way around? Like, you have to bring everybody in, there should be no monitoring, and yet in Australia it's like no reasonable ground required. You know, they can stop and search anyone entering the state.
They love
you don't
it.
Even have to have
they
a
love
reason
it.
For it. You know, I don't know. Is there any criticism of that, or do people just accept it? I have no idea. But it goes back.
We have some people from Western, okay? One guy in particular, Greg Mabry, who I have on the show a lot. He's actually got a show at the weekend, the No Fly Zone, and a lady called Kate Fantanelle, who flew the flag. She tried to run for the Senate last year with the Liberal Democrats. She's as libertarian as it comes. She went demented living in Western Australia, and she moved to Victoria. She went to America. She's back there again. And now this is flaring up. She can't get it. It's almost like, and I'm generalizing here, the people just were happy. The polls suggested they were happy with that. And then when the elections came around last year in Australia, they re-elected McGowan. They thought he did a damn fine job. Maybe it's Stockholm syndrome. I don't know. But they like it there. They like that stuff.
But again, it's using the emergency powers from COVID, isn't it, really, that they're able to do it. So it's that same thing. If you let politicians change the law in an emergency, they'll create emergencies to change the law. I think I heard said that it was claiming there were drastic decline in meth use, and that was the main reason given. Really?
Increase in meth use under McGowan.
But apparently that's the main reason, and that seems unbelievable to me. You can then just give away everybody's human rights and give the police and the state more power.
And of course, you've no way of checking
dodgy statistic.
Well, and of course, exactly. You've no way of checking that. He says Matthews has decreased. What are you going to do? How are you going to check that? How are you going to fact check the Australian authorities' figures on Matthews? You can't do it. And like I said, jokingly, I've never done drugs in my life. I've done a lot of other things. I've never done any drugs. But if I had been living in Western Australia for the last 3 years, I'd probably be a junkie right now. I'd probably be snorting stuff and injecting stuff and inhaling all sorts of things just to stick it out over there. I think he's created a legion of Matthews. I don't know, but they just seem to like it in Western Australia. Victoria is another one too, by the way. Victoria, Australia, under Dan Andrews, and the Northern Territories at the time under Gunner, this raging psychopath called Gunner, Michael Gunner. He was a nasty piece of work. He's gone now, but he ruled the Northern Territories with a rod of iron, and he looked like a certain historical figure when he started ranting and raving. A little Austrian man with a moustache. I'm not going to name him, but yeah, he brought to mind a certain little Austrian man from the past with a little distinctive moustache under his, the septum of his nose. I think you know who I'm talking about here. That was Michael Gunner.
It's all about emergency powers. That particular person obviously brought the Enabling Act in, which gave him those emergency powers. We've seen Macron last week use the similar emergency powers to change the pension age without any democratic vote. You saw last week here, they very quietly extended the Coronavirus Act, and that's emergency powers. This is what we've been warning about for 2 years, and each one of these Western countries are just slipping it quietly behind closed doors. Those emergency powers are still in place and still being able to be brought back at any time. And that's how they're going to carry on moving forward, because I can't see them removing them now. Can you?
They won't. They won't. In Northern Ireland last week, the same thing happened. They extended the emergency powers for another 6 months up until September. There's what emergency? Surely the question must be asked, what emergency? But yet it was voted for. It was pushed through within Northern Ireland, or it wasn't voted for. Let me say it was just extended for another 6 months because the whole political system over here is a complete shambles, but it doesn't seem to matter. As you say, whenever Michael Gove was once interviewed on TV many, many years ago, and he famously said, when you give a government or a body of people power, there's never been an instance in history of them giving it back willingly. They have to have it forcibly removed from them. And the Tory party or the Labour party or any party in Northern Ireland is testimony to that, or McGowan is testimony to that, or whoever it happens to be. They don't want to relinquish the power because it's all about control.
And we're seeing the same in Israel. He's trying to push through more judicial review, and that will be more emergency powers for him. You know, once a dictator, always a dictator. That doesn't change. And we need to, across globally, push for more democratic vote. I mean, we've got now in Scotland, we've got, Youssef, he's coming without any democratic vote. We've got Sunak in power here without any democratic vote. You can see a string of coincidences or is it coincidence or is it all deliberate, Rick?
Well, okay, we haven't really talked, and I want to touch on this one briefly. We haven't talked about Youssef yet up in Scotland, not properly. So, unless you've been living under a rock, basically Nicola Sturgeon, Scottish Nationalist Party, she resigns. There's speculation who's going to replace her. So this guy, Youssef, has been inserted into that position. I'm not going to pull any punches. He's a raging racist, okay? There's a speech that he made about a year or so ago. You can check it online. He references white people 19 times negatively. He says the whites are doing this, the whites are doing that. And this is Scotland, by the way, which is approximately 96% white. He has a problem that white people are in positions of government. White people are in positions. That's like me going to Kenya, right, with a few of my buddies and saying, hey, what's going on? What's with all the black people running the country? It's 99% black, Rick. That's why. I think we should have whites. Do you know what would happen, Natalie? I would be necklaced. Do you know what that means? A tar put around my neck and it would be set on fire. Either that or yeah. I would be stoned or booted out of the country. So by all means, if someone is fit and capable of doing a job, give them it. It doesn't matter if they're Muslim or Hindu or Sikh or Buddhist or whatever, or atheist. Give them the job. But this guy had a bee in his bonnet because there were so many white people occupying positions of power and authority. It's simply demographics, Natalie. 96% of Scotland is white. So therefore, is it not unreasonable to assume that most of those positions will be white?
That's why his rant in Parliament was so infamous. Because, I mean, I actually watched it again this morning and I could almost speak white in a Scottish accent because he repeated it so many times. And the Muslim population there is only 2% as well. And I don't know if you saw, he's put a court case against a nursery school because he tried to claim that his child couldn't get into the nursery because of racism and that because she was a Muslim, and that they had to drop that in the end, that case. So he's obviously got quite a chip on his shoulder about it. The first thing he's done, which you sent me this morning, the picture of him doing Muslim prayers.
In Butte House with five of his buddies. You know, and look at the pictures.
No women there, all men as well.
No women, and all the walls behind him are all paintings of old white Scottish heroes and legends. And listen, this is not a racist thing we're talking. This is just there's a 2% population. He's now the Scottish First Minister, first Muslim Scottish First Minister, unelected, by the way. There's a vast majority of people in Scotland are white, okay? So it's not that you can't be in a... it's not that he shouldn't be the First Minister, but he shouldn't be flexing now, saying, right, I now demand that there are more of my people doing this and doing that. If they're fit and well
Which
to do
is.
The job, yes, but not by default. Not because the First Minister now can flex a little bit and bring his buddies into Butte House and the five of them are all standing there in prayer. I'm surprised they weren't kneeling. Facing Mecca, because that'll be the next thing with William Wallace and Braveheart looking down from the walls going, what the hell's going on in Scotland? What the hell's going on in bloody Scotland? What's going on?
I'm glad you did the accent. I wasn't going to attempt it. But it was, to me, putting that picture out, what sensationalism to deliberately cause more tensions and divide. That photo was always going to cause problems, you know, and I'm like the least racist person. I couldn't care what race you are, what colour you are. If you can do the job and you're not corrupt and you do it well, absolutely. Whoever you are, don't care. But has his personal religion actually got a place in politics? I don't see that it has. You know, he's pushing that upon the people when actually it's nothing to do with his constituents or the electorate. It to me is again another way to cause more division and problems. I cannot see why that picture of prayers was put on there.
To antagonize.
It is.
You know, it's like you and I, if you and I were both practicing Christians and we decided to go into a mosque with a big cross at Easter and say we want to just say a prayer to the Lord and thank him for what he did, you know, it would be inflammatory, let's just say, to say the least. So there's a time and a place for things like prayer and getting together.
I would say if it was a Christian who'd come in, I would actually say the same thing. This is not about race or religion. Yeah, I wouldn't want to see a Christian praying who's just been put into power. Well, that's got nothing to do with your political powers. And in the same case, if it was a place in Africa, a predominantly black African country, would somebody be saying, well, there needs to be more white people? That would be considered racist, wouldn't it?
What? Here's the weird thing, right? Here's the weird thing about Kenya, for example. Obviously, the 99%, 0.9%, they're all black, okay? But within the country, there are around about 50 different tribes, all right? So then who's in power doesn't become a race thing. It becomes a tribal thing. And that country has been in 2007, following the election in 2007, which is the first time I ever went there, there was over 150,000 Kenyans displaced from their homes and thousands killed on the streets of Nairobi and across Kenya because of tribal politics. So this doesn't even go to skin color here, by the way. This is when you start to implement your tribalism or your beliefs on a job that should be for everybody's benefit, and you start to try and manipulate it, then you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble no matter where it is in the world.
Which is, you know, which is my argument why it's disgraceful putting that picture out there when he knows it's going to deliberately antagonise. I believe, you know, a job as a politician is to really put put the public together, not segregate Correct. Them, you know, and to put that out there, there's only one reason for doing that. And people should be pointing that out because, I mean, he, from what I can see, you know, I only knew about him before this is riding on a scooter and falling over. I don't know if you ever saw that video. It's I worth did. Watching it was funny. Anyone. If you haven't seen it, go online. If you want to see a politician make a, I was going to swear then, but make a something of himself, then yeah, go and see him on the scooter. But apart from that, everything he's done is controversial. He's been put in place as a controversial figure. He's got the gender ideology that he's pushing. He's pushing the Muslim, that everything is big controversial subjects. And that
they're
seems to be his leader.
They're going to be begging for Nicola Sturgeon to come back by Christmas. Watch and see. You thought Nicola Sturgeon was bad? Wait until you get 6 months of...
He wants to get back in the EU yourself. As well, doesn't he? So he wants, he's pushing independence, EU, all these big subjects.
He's the perfect man for the job, really, when you think about it, when it comes to globalism. It's the perfect man for the job. We've got to take a little pause here, and when we come back, we'll wrap this up with another few stories. And we've got time still, if you feel motivated, if you're Scottish out there, and you think William Wallace is spinning in his grave right now, you can give us a little call or leave your thoughts and opinions in the live chat. But we'll be right back here on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea. Once again, the media got way out over their skis. We've got that Drumpf now! And then once they find out, maybe not, they've got to distract, so we have to have a school shooting and not one, but two train derailments. The pattern has become so unmistakable as to almost be a cliche. Anytime they've got bad news on the horizon, they need to distract people from the truth. We have a school shooting. We have an airplane flying into a food processing factory. We have train derailments and associated environmental disasters. We have anything big and flashy and bloody. If it bleeds, it leads. Meanwhile, Stumblebum Joe yucks it up with kids in the East Room when he's supposed to be addressing the school shooting, leaving it to Corinne Jean-Pierre to voice the plaintive Democrat refrain, "How many more children need to die before Republicans pass the assault weapons ban?" Even though the previous assault weapons ban passed in the Clinton administration not only didn't save any lives, it cost lives. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And unfortunately for America, we're seeing all too much of it lately. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
For decades, senior government and intergovernmental organization officials have peddled fear with climate change alarmism. In June 1989, Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Programme, said that governments had a 10-year opportunity to arrest the greenhouse effect before it went beyond human control. He claimed that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the warming trend was not stabilised by the year 2000. In reality, global carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels and industry were 62% higher in 2021 than in 1989, and sea level has barely changed.
The conversation continues with Rick Munn and Natalie Cheel on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Okay, Natalie, one of two stories here. Let's maybe even try and cover them both off. Royal Mail, its bosses are threatening to declare insolvency as pay talks near collapse. Could we see the Royal Mail collapsing as well as the banks of Europe this year, or is it all puff and blow?
Well, it's again because of talks about pay, isn't it? It's all come from because... it's disgusting, really, and corruption at the highest level in terms of privatization. Because at the top, the leadership, they're all still being paid huge bonuses, the shares and dividends, and the parcel part of it is making an absolute mint, a massive success. So they're actually making massive loads of profits and saying they're going to go insolvent, basically because the parcel section, where all they're making their money, they don't want to bail out the letter part. that actually is really unsuccessful and not making any money. So instead, the government, they want the government to pay. You need to take that unsuccessful bit back. Yeah. And we want to keep the really, really profitable bit. Yeah. And then get the public to pay out for that. So yeah, just another corrupt organization, it seems.
I remember years ago, right, just this is a little bit of lightheartedness. You know, it used to be a first class stamp was 20p-ish, 18, 20p. Then it went up to like 60p. Now it's nearly a quid to send a letter. And there was an old comedian in Britain called Jack D. Now, this is going back to the 80s, but he did a sketch on the people complaining about the prices of stamps. So he said about old women coming into the post office. He said, I used to work in a post office and all the old women used to come in and say, 18 P for a stamp, that's ridiculous. And he says, well then deliver it yourself then, stop bloody complaining. If you don't want to use the Royal Mail, don't you deliver it by hand to Glasgow or to Scarborough or wherever you want to go. And of course it was very tongue-in-cheek, but listen, it's something they don't want. It's almost like junk mail, you know. The posties have to actually sort through.
That's
I have
it.
A friend who's a postie, he has to sort through all the junk mail and deliver it through all the letterboxes. You don't want that hassle and that crap, and effectively that's what they're doing, is that they're trying to say, look, take the letters and all that crap, we want to make
they want the government
the
to sort that out. I'll
and
give
you
that
sort
bit
out the
back
letters. Yeah, we'll give you
but
the crap bit.
You know, prices are rocketing, the service is even worse, but really, why shouldn't the shareholders pay for the bit that's failing? Why should the public have to pay for that? It's crazy. Or the other thing you can say is, are they trying to say, you know, for the environment, climate change, shouldn't you be sending letters? If they do push it back to the government, are the government going to put the prices up even more and say, no, there's no reason why you should be sending letters? It should all be digital, Rick.
And here's the thing. It's another, what would you say, famously British institution, the Royal Mail.
Is.
The talk of the Royal Mail going bust this year, along with everything else, we're seeing the Red Arrows being moved out of Brampton. That's a very symbolic picture. That jet on that flatbed lorry to make room for those people coming in. Even that last article that we talked about, those five men praying to Allah in Bute House in Scotland. Very, very provocative images, very, very provocative thoughts and stories. They seem to be coming up. There's another one here, which is mind-blowing, really. The Guardian newspaper apologizes for its founder's links to the slave trade and announces it will be paying £10 million in reparations. They said its founders had links to slavery. Now, check this out. And I might be due some compensation from The Guardian myself. The editor, Catherine Viner, said the founder made money from crimes against humanity. Have The Guardian not been responsible for crimes against humanity for the last 3 years straight? Demonizing people, vilifying people, instigating segregation among people, pushing agendas that were killing people, pushing agendas that were making people commit suicide, causing mental health issues, causing friction, causing division. Hey, why stop at 10 million at the slave trade? Why not set aside 100 million for people that they demonized and vilified over the last 3 years?
I don't know what you're talking about, Rick, because, you know, the important issues of the day is what happened in the cotton trade. You know, the decade-long program of restorative justice is far more important than what's happened in the last three years.
Oh, yeah.
It's wokeness gone mad, isn't it? I mean, do we all need to research and investigate our histories now and start paying back money to any possible mistakes our ancestors have made? Because that's basically what they're saying. That's what's going to be next. Is that going to be added to our digital ID? Let's look back on your ancestry. Oh, you've got some credit points. You've got some credit points taken off, Rick, because your ancestor made a massive mistake and you have to pay now. You know, he was a racist and you're a racist by family, heritage.
But where does the 10 million, why? Number one, how did they come upon the figure of 10 million? Surely if you were guilty of a crime against humanity and you were a big conglomeration, surely it should be at least 100 million. Why not a billion? Why not cut everybody's pay and to make reparations? And who gets the money, by the way? Who gets the money?
And how far do they want to go back? Who's deciding this? Like you said, and that money's probably going to go to somebody who's already rich themselves to create a bigger wealth divide and poverty gap, thus creating the problem even more.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean,
the craziest I read.
San Francisco, San Francisco are also looking at reparations to citizens that they can prove if they descended from slaves that came from Africa, they are due money from the borough or the district of San Francisco. So my point is, and you've probably highlighted there, where does the money go? I don't actually have the final location of that in front of me now. But if, for example, it was to be sent to Western Guyana or wherever, Morocco or Libya or wherever it is that the places or that the slaves came from or the people were taken away from, it went to that country, you can bet your ass it's not going to go any further than the government officials there. Do you think the average street trader is going to get a $50 bonus at Christmas from The Guardian because of slave trade? Not a mission. Not a mission.
Why do I think it will go to some charity, Rick, that's fighting wokeness? Is the idea that I'm thinking, which will then obviously go into the same pockets.
It'll go to BLM. Watch and see. It'll go to BLM or that other organisation over in England where the woman, had a problem with a 90-year-old asking her where she was from because she was decked up in Nigerian dress and she's actually from, the West End of London. I don't know, but time will tell. Interesting one there. Anyway, Natalie, the time is up. Time has elapsed on our little session here, but all being well, tomorrow we'll be back on air here from 10 a.m. UK time. Natalie Cheel signing out. Rick Munn almost signing out. I'll be back after the news with more of the same on TNT Radio.